At Red Barn, our pet food ingredients work overtime. They aren't just there for show. Dandelion greens work to maintain a healthy digestive system. Salmon oil works to enhance the immune system. Green-lipped mussels work to support joint health. These hardworking ingredients support your dog's active, healthy life. Look at the label. We want you to. Red Barn Naturals Pet Food. Simply the best. Find it in your local pet specialty store. Visit redbarninc.com/coupon to save a dollar off your first can.
Hi, this is Russ Terry, founder and CEO of Life Coach Radio Networks. Today's sponsor is Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free audiobook when you sign up for a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. That's audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. And now, here's today's show.
The following episode of Mark My Words has been edited for this rebroadcast.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to Mark My Words here on the Life Coach Radio Network, and today is March 2nd, 2014. This is Mark Shaw, broadcasting live from New York City. I'm a certified life and business coach, and twice per month I host Mark My Words, which is a life coaching-oriented show where I interview various people with inspiring life stories of overcoming adversity, and I also speak with authors of great coaching-related books and programs, as well as many others who have great things to say. So tune in with me the first and third Sunday of every month. So before I start with this evening's topic, I actually am going to tell you a little funny story about something that happened that relates to the topic. Tonight's topic, of course, being perfectionism and not having to be perfect and not fearing making mistakes. And when you do make a mistake, not getting too bent out of shape over it. So I realized that the link that I sent out to my email list today did not contain the right URL behind it. So it looked like the right link to the naked eye, but it actually sent you, instead of to the link for this show, it actually ended up sending folks to my guest's YouTube video of her TED Talk. So as valuable as that was, I wanted to make sure that people could still get to hear the show tonight. So hopefully you all made it here tonight safe and sound. I sent out a correction email, which then didn't go to everybody because I forgot to click on something that I should have clicked on. So I was really imperfect today, which is perfect in and of itself, as our guest Maria Pascucci will certainly illustrate today. So I'm very excited to have Maria with me. Maria is before I get into that, I also want to say that I became aware of my mistake because of a friend of mine, an old pal from high school, who told me that he didn't get the email, and my investigating why he didn't get it helped me discover these other problems. So had he not thought to email me to say that, I would never have discovered those problems. So a good shout out to my old buddy Keith Kahn in Bedminster, New Jersey. Thank you, Keith. So and, of course, tonight is the Oscars, so those of you who are listening live with us, I appreciate your taking yourself away from the Oscars, from the perfectionism of everybody's faces and clothing on the Oscars to come and hear about perfectionism here with Maria and me. So tonight I'm going to be talking with Maria Pascucci. I'm very excited. Maria was actually a student of mine at iPEC Coaching. And very excited and proud about what she's done with her coaching business. And she actually now coaches people around the issue of recovering from perfectionism, because perfectionism can really hurt when we're obsessed with it. So Maria speaks of her personal battle with extreme perfectionism and overachievement and the physical illness that manifests as a result. So she's going to take us through her journey from severe pain, from self-induced stress-related illness, including endometriosis, to an empowered life on her way to joy, happiness, and fulfillment. Maria's overall message is that perfectionism has been glorified and socially sanctioned, and it's actually a form of self-abuse, and there's a very high price associated with it. So it's not necessarily the key to success. when you spend so much time trying to be perfect, you don't authentically connect, and you cut yourself off from the full richness of life. You don't take risks. You don't learn and grow because you're afraid of that you won't be perfect. So I'm very excited to welcome Maria Pascucci to the show. So, Maria, welcome.
Hi, Mark.
Hi. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm so excited.
Good. Well, so am I. And I actually just got a message from a listener. I'm sorry, so I got a little distracted for a moment, who says that she's having trouble logging into the show. So we'll just have to deal with that. So, yes, so welcome to my imperfect show this evening. And I'm really glad you're here, and I'm real proud of everything that you've been doing and your TED Talk. Congratulations on that. The link to that is on my website, so some of the listeners perhaps have already had the opportunity to listen to it. So I'm glad you're here. And I'd love for you to just kind of start by telling us a little bit about your backstory and how perfectionism and the drive to be perfect has affected your life.
Yeah, well, geez, do you want the long story or do you want the four-hour version?
Let's go for the shorter version because I'm going to ask you some follow-up questions anyway.
I think, as I talked about in my TED Talk, the drive to be perfect, I really think that that started when I went through puberty. My hormones were all out of balance, which I discovered later was that I was diagnosed with endometriosis. But at the time, when I was 13, my skin was breaking out like crazy. I was getting teased and bullied at school for it. I went through two periods when I was 14 and 15, where I was hospitalized for ruptured ovarian cysts. And I just, everything in my life was out of control. I was scared, and I think what happened, looking back, of course, when I was 14, I wasn't aware of this, but I just unconsciously made this decision that I couldn't control what was happening to my body, so I was just going to start controlling everything else. So I started perfecting and controlling and overachieving, and I think it was a way to protect myself from the embarrassment and the shame and the pain that I was feeling. That carried with me through college. I took antibiotics for acne, which temporarily healed the acne, but then, so I shifted the perfectionism into academics, went to college, and I was one of the first in my family to go to college, and just overachieved, and I graduated after 4 years with two majors, two minors, two part-time jobs on the side, and I had a 3.92 GPA. And, you know, I had a panic attack in the bathroom during the final exam. And, you know, I graduated with stress and anxiety-induced health problems. So that's, that was a wake-up call for me.
Mm-hmm. So you got an A in making yourself crazy, apparently.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing, too, though. When you're a perfectionist, it's this all-or-nothing thinking. So even though I graduated at the top of my class, because I had essentially a breakdown, I was looking at the person next to me, and he graduated at the top of his class, but he looked like he was fine, and I was suffering, so therefore I still felt like I failed.
Sure. Sure. And I'm guessing, too, that since your GPA wasn't a 4.0, what feelings did you have about that?
Yeah, it was, I had one B in college, and it was a professor who was a really tough grader, and he also taught other classes that I was interested in, but I didn't take them because I didn't want my GPA to suffer, so... You know,
wow.
That's one of the things that perfectionists deny themselves sometimes, just the love of learning and immersing themselves into something new and challenging themselves because they're afraid of not being perfect and somebody's going to find out that they're not perfect.
Sure. So it's interesting. So you actually end up learning less because,
yeah.
You know, you're giving up learning opportunities all in an effort to make it look on paper like you learned more.
Right. Yep, exactly.
Interesting. It sounds like a lot of work. It sounds like a lot of mental acrobatics and stuff, and it sounds like it's a much more draining amount of work than simply studying to really learn and do well but not perfect would have been for you.
Yeah, so. It is exhausting. There's this, a few years ago, there's this study that came out of Duke University and it's talking about young women in the pursuit for what they called effortless perfection, which is scary. Mm-hmm. It's the pursuit of looking perfect and acting perfect and being perfect, but at the same time making it look effortless, which is exhausting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure, and far from effortless.
Right.
So,
far from effortless. That's very true.
You know. So, I would love for you to share. There were two things that we talked about in preparing for this interview that mm-hmm. came up for you around perfectionism. One was about preparing for and almost delaying this very interview. And another was a college radio interview that you did. Can you just briefly tell us about those two things?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have my Campus Calm business, and that's a business that I'm a college speaker, and I've had that website open for 7 years. And now that I graduated from the IPEX program, I'm expanding my coaching brand to coach recovering perfectionists of all ages and not just college students. So in preparing mm-hmm. for this interview, I'm launching my new coaching website, and the website wasn't finished. And I, like, the part of me, the perfectionist in me, wanted with, like, every fiber in my being to call you up and be like, Mark, can we please push this interview back? I can't do this. My website's not perfect yet. So when we talk about the new website and when visitors are invited to check it out, there are pages on the website that when you click on it, it just says coming soon, and, you know, I'm going to practice what I preach, and I'm a work in progress. So is my website. So here it is, and it's no big deal. Yeah, it's no big deal.
Great.
And this is a wonderful learning lesson for me, because in years past when I would do interviews, I would ask for the list of questions in advance, and I would spend hours scripting and preparing every single sentence of every answer. And I remember one radio show that I did, it was a college radio network, and I just sat there, and she would ask me the questions on the air, and I would read my responses, and I'm sure that it was a little frustrating for her because I had like a 5-paragraph response for every question she asked me. But, you know, I think sometimes, I mean, when you're dealing with a perfectionist, it's great because we'll do all the work for you and you can just sit back. But we're also masking, at least in my case, we're masking the fact that we're afraid that somebody's going to ask us a question and we're not going to go know the answer and we're going to look stupid. So instead, mm-hmm. we just perfect and control so that doesn't happen.
Again, lots and lots of exhausting work. And like you said, it comes at a really, really huge cost to really have to be that perfect with everything. So what, Maria, would you say has been the greatest cost to you in your strive for this absolute all or nothing perfection?
I would say that it would just be peace of mind in enjoying the journey. So mm-hmm. in the past, I would just drive myself nuts preparing for something. And then when I went to deliver it, you know, whatever it was, it was great. And instead of just having that faith and trust in myself to know that I got this, instead, it was always this fear, which, like, for example, I'm on vacation this week with my husband and his family in Las Vegas, which is awesome. And under normal circumstances, I would have spent all day today preparing for this interview and scripting out my answers. And instead, my husband and I went to Red Rock Canyon today, and we went hiking in the mountains, which was awesome. And it's just nice to mm-hmm. know that I can do this interview and just know that I, you know, I got this. I know what I'm talking about. I don't have to obsess over it. And it's freeing.
Sure. So you really, so it sounds like what the costs are on the other side of that, it's the joy, the excitement, and the passion in life and the things that you can do that are so enjoyable. It costs you that when you're spending so much time being perfect, not to mention costing you your health in the way that it did back then when you were in college and even more recently with endometriosis and everything else that that you've had going on. I mean, it's really cost you your happiness and your health.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is that when you are chronically stressed out, nobody can argue with the fact that it weakens your immune system. And when your immune system is weaker, you're more susceptible for chronic disease. I'm not saying that my perfectionism caused my endometriosis, but it definitely was a contributing factor, and it certainly flares and has flared it up over the years. And I've gone through insomnia in my life. I've experienced anxiety. So it's all aggravated by striving to be perfect.
Sure. No, absolutely. I mean, just like, you know, just like stress doesn't cause a heart attack or a heart condition, I should say, it certainly is a major contributing factor. And so is diet and exercise. So it's kind of the same thing. So, you know, I'm interested in something that that you've said before in talking about your quest on helping people through their own perfectionistic tendencies. And it's, you say that perfectionism is glorified. Tell me a little bit more about that. What do you mean when you say that it's glorified?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different facets of perfectionism where I think it's glorified. I mean, first, academic perfectionism, winning awards. You get scholarships to college. If you have perfect or near-perfect grades, you can get scholarships to grad school. And it's just this cycle that we want students to be well-rounded, but at the same time, we want them to be high achievers in every area of their life, which can stress out especially students who, you know, have a perfectionist kind of nature to begin with. That can be really stressful. I mean, even just the Olympics were just on. It's how many times was the word perfect used while I was watching the Olympics? I couldn't count how many times that was used. And I mean, flip to any women's magazine and you'll see the pressure to look perfect. It's one women's fashion and fitness magazine, and in the cover of the magazine that just says, I have it here, it's look 10 years younger today, drop a jean size in 21 days, have it all this fall, super sexy hair, bigger flattering fashion in the body of your dreams.
Another
magazine, it's, you know, on the cover, it's like, get it now, a body built for sex. So it's like, apparently, unless you have the perfect body, you can't do that either.
Right. Sure. Absolutely. Yeah, you know, and I worry about that, too. I mean, I have two nieces, and it concerns me. One, she's just finishing up she's in her second semester of her freshman year in college. And, you know, my other one's going to be going to college soon. And, you know, the thing that I hope that they know and they take with them is that they don't have to be perfect. They're both very, very good students. They're both brilliant and smart, and they get amazing grades. And having worked in higher education myself in my previous career, one of the things that I knew, particularly working at NYU, New York University, which is a pretty prestigious school, is that we had a lot of students that were at the top of their class that came to school there. Well, then you got all these top students, and not everybody could be at the top of their class, so they really struggled with, oh, my God, it's not so easy for me to be at the top anymore, and they would really struggle, and I'd have to kind of, you know, do some academic advising with some of them through that. And there's an enormous amount of pressure. So, you know, to get those perfect grades. And I remember the messages I heard growing up, you know, don't you want to get good grades so that you can get into a good college and make a lot of money? The message being, you know, really, really great grades, perfectionism, means you're going to earn a lot of money. You know, who's not going to want that and be influenced by that, you know?
Right. And then a lot of students take that message, internalize it, and then conclude, so that if I'm not perfect and if I get a B, I'm a failure and I'm never going to create success or be happy or make money.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. We actually have a caller that's calling in.
Oh, okay.
So I want to, so we're going to pick that up. So here we go. So, caller, I'm going to identify you by your last four digits of your phone number is 1019. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Kristen, and I just had a comment about this, actually. I'm seeing a lot of perfectionism with working, in the sense that I feel like the media is portraying overworking as being really attractive. Like, the biggest example I'm seeing right now is House of Cards, where we have, like, Francis at 11 o'clock at night working at the Capitol building, and you have his wife, Claire, like, always up when he comes home and she's working. They always have their laptops in bed with them. So I feel like the media is kind of portraying this overworking lifestyle and this as a good thing, when really it's something that causes stress and it's not healthy. And I have my own business, and I have clients who have this lifestyle, and they'll email me on, like, Saturday nights and stuff and expect me to reply, and that's difficult because I don't want to have that lifestyle. I have to kind of set boundaries there and show that I don't find that to be a healthy work life, to be working constantly. So that's where I'm just seeing a lot of, like, the perfectionism right now.
Sure, absolutely. In fact, you know, how many times do people send you an email? I've known people who have done this. I try to put a stop to it as soon as it happens, but they'll send you an email, and then they'll call you in 5 minutes. Did you get my email yet? It's like, no, I haven't. So, I think you're absolutely right. Maria, what are your thoughts about Kristen's – is it Kristen?
Yes.
What are your thoughts about Kristen's comments about the media – glorifying this hard-working, get-it-to-perfection concept?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, I completely find that relatable. I see that a lot, and I think that, you know, in our society, and you see it from a young age, from college all the way up then to the working world, it's this whole, we brag about how busy we are, and we brag about how little sleep we get. You know, in college, I slept 3 hours last night. Oh, you slept 3 hours. I only slept 2 hours. And I think it's something that you see, and then it carries on. And, you know, Kristen's absolutely right. You're seeing these images everywhere that the busier you are, I think the images, the more successful you are and the more money you must be making and the more status you must have you know, I can definitely see how that would be difficult, where you see everywhere this image of what success is supposed to look like, and that's the beauty of being able to take a step back and then ask yourself the question, what does success look like to me? You know, how do I want to create my work-life balance or whatever it is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's interesting, too. I meet people, you know, in all kinds of professions, and I always ask people what they do, you know, in just my casual conversations. And I'm always interested in how much people like their careers and their jobs. And I find that there are some jobs, some careers that I call prestige jobs, where they take it for the prestige. They go to law school for the prestige, become a lawyer for the prestige. And I'm specifically picking on lawyers right now just because that's the most prominent one that I hear, is that, you know, I ask them, how do you feel about the practice of law? 9 out of 10 say, I hate it. And they feel stuck in it. But then when they made the decision to get into it, they were motivated by these perfectionistic standards and the accoutrements of success, as I call them. And now they're finding, you know, as many other people, not just lawyers, find, that here they are at a point in their career where they're unfulfilled and unhappy. Yeah, they have the money that was promised, but they're not really able to enjoy it. And they're missing something. There's sort of a spiritual void, an emotional void, which can be very, very painful and very damaging.
Right. And, I think that starts at, again, it starts at younger ages where a lot of students are encouraged to, instead of really following their passions, let's take a look at the top 10 list of college majors that lead to high-paying jobs, and then let's pick from them. And what's happening mm-hmm. is a lot of people are choosing careers that don't make them happy.
That's right. That's right. No, absolutely. So, well, thank you, Kristen, for the call. I really appreciate your comments and your thoughts, and thanks for calling in. So when we were talking, Maria, about some of the costs to being perfect, there was a story that you told me. You may have told it already, though, tonight. It may have been your story, but it was something about a student who dropped a class. Was that another student that we had talked about? Because if so, I'd like you to share that. Or was that the same one you told before about when you dropped a class?
No, I actually have received a lot of messages from students over the years with this story. One in particular, when I was in college, I was a work study in the history department at the college I graduated from, and one of the professors there, she knew that I battled with extreme perfectionism, and she told me a story about a student of hers who, right before the midterms, it was like the cutoff date where you can drop the class, and one of her students dropped the class right before midterm, and when the professor asked the student why she was dropping the class, the student said that she loved the class, but she knew that she wasn't going to get an A in the class, and she was not going to damage her 4.0. And the professor told me that it was just such a shame because at the time by midterm, the student was slated to get an A- in the class. And it's just so unfortunate that student was missing out on all of these learning opportunities and lessons in mm-hmm. resilience because mm-hmm. of that whole pressure to be perfect and graduate with the perfect 4.0.
Sure, sure. Yeah, and, you know, what's sad, too, is that it's not even just, you know, the learning opportunities. You know, we always say, oh, you know, don't miss out on the learning opportunities, and sometimes that's heard as sort of a generic, like, there's always a learning opportunity. But on top of that, you said she loved the class. That's the part that I find particularly sad, is that she loved the class. So aside from the learning opportunity that any life experience or class that you'll take, even if you don't really enjoy it that much, is, it's always a learning experience, this would have been that much more of a learning experience because she loved it and was willing to sacrifice that for this perfect GPA. And I wonder how she's doing now. You know? Do these patterns carry into our lives?
It does. And it's interesting because I think that what is happening is a lot of people are tying, from a very young age, they start to tie their self-worth to their performance in life. So whether it's the GPA or then when you're in the working world, it's the business card and the titles and the dollar amounts, that it's all these things outside of ourselves that we define ourselves by. So then let's take the example of the student. If the student measures their self-worth by their grades, well, then they're not going to stretch themselves outside of their comfort zone and try something new because they're not going to risk such a blow to their self-worth. I mean, I think that was a big part of it for me when I was a student too. And, you know, I received emails from students on a regular basis from all around the world for the last 7 years. So I have a pretty good idea of what's going on with a lot of young perfectionists in our world. And I see and I hear those stories time and time again.
Yeah. It's like we're saying, you know, it's sad. And I was just thinking of getting onto something else, but I actually have decided that before I do that, we're going to take a little break to talk about the next shows that are coming up on Life Coach Radio Network. So when we come back, I want to pick up with the role that parents and teachers play in the whole perfectionism thing. But first, let's take a look at the shows that are coming up on the Life Coach Radio Network in the next couple of days.
So we're here with Maria Pascucci, who is a coach that coaches people on perfectionism and recovering from perfectionism. And she's also an author and the owner of CampusCom.com, where she coaches women leaders, particularly on college campuses. But her practice has also grown to include not just students that she coaches on perfectionism, but everybody else as well, or at least other women as well. So Maria, when we paused a few moments ago, we were about to look at the role that parents and teachers play in the perpetuation of these ideas of perfectionism in their kids. Speak to that a little bit. What is the role that parents and teachers currently seem to often play in creating a culture of perfectionism?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's happening is that there are large numbers of very, very well-meaning parents and educators and policymakers who are, I don't even say consciously, but using fear and scarcity tactics to basically frighten kids into perfectionism. And what I think is going on is, so you have a student who maybe gets C's or whatever, gets some B's, and sometimes their parents are saying, you know, you have to try harder, you're not going to be able to find a job unless you get this, and thinking that maybe that will be the motivating factor to help, you know, a student kind of buckle down and start working and start taking school seriously. But I think what's also happening is that the students who already are kind of hardwired for perfectionism, that they're hearing that message too, and that message is just scaring a lot of people and just reinforcing that fear-based perfectionism that's already there, and it's just perpetuating it. Now, it certainly is not all parents or all educators by any means. I actually receive a lot of emails from concerned parents over the years, mm-hmm. just saying that, you know, my child is such a perfectionist and pushing themselves to the breaking point, and I don't know what to do. I don't know how to help them. So, you know, they're certainly not the problem. That being said, there's a study that came out from the Jed Foundation. They partnered with 17 Magazine, and they mm-hmm. did a survey of like 671 students ages 13 to 21, and it found that 74% said the pressure to be perfect came from within, and then 56% said that the demand came from parents. Another thing that I see happening is I spoke at a leadership conference a couple years ago at a very reputable, well-known university, and during one of the workshops, the workshop presenter, she didn't make it to the keynote presentation, so she didn't know what I had just spoken on. And during the workshop, mm-hmm. I sat in on it, and she said she was a very well-known, successful businesswoman in her community, and she just said, you know, the recession's happening, and there's not a lot of jobs, and you need to buckle down, and you need to get straight A's, and it's the only way that you're going to be able to find a job when you get out. And I just saw, like, I was sitting in the back of the room, and all of the students' heads were kind of, like, turning and looking at me, and I was like, oh, crap. So, you know, the students are getting a lot of mixed messages out there about what it takes to be successful.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, and that's the thing, too. It's, you know, it's very confusing when you get, you know, some messages telling you this way, some messages telling you that way, and it just, you know, it creates an air of confusion, and I think that in that kind of environment, we start making fear-based choices because we're afraid of something bad happening, so we choose things to avoid this
yeah.
bad thing instead of really making choices that are really ultimately going to get us what we want.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have another caller on the line that I'm actually going to pick up. So caller calling from area code 219. You're on the air. Thanks for calling Mark.
Hi there, Mark. Thank you. I'm
Hi.
Megan. I'm one of Maria's clients.
Oh, great. Hi,
Megan.
Hi, Megan.
Welcome. Hi, Maria. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I'm calling to comment on the conversation you've been having. I think it's really interesting what Kristen had said about House of Cards. I think the drive to perfectionism also explains some of the dishonesty, some of the cheating scandals that we see popping up in the news every now and again, when the results are more important than the process. I think it's just a result. And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that, Maria.
That's really interesting. Well, first of all, thank you for calling in, Megan. And I will say that I've never seen House of Cards. You're about the fifth person who's told me about that show, so I definitely need to start watching that. But, yeah, I mean, some of the dishonesty it is. It's a very results-focused society, so I can see how it could be easier to cut some corners along the way on the journey if it's going to lead to better results faster. And I could see how that could lead to some unethical choices that, you know, that you can see people making that you hear about in the media every day. So it's a really interesting point.
Yeah, I'm also guessing it also plays into the whole issue of academic dishonesty that happens on campuses, because in a strive to be perfect, it's like, oh my God, I have to get a perfect score on this test and or on this paper, and might lead to those kinds of fear-based choices as well.
Right. Yep. Exactly. Cheating on high school and college campuses is definitely a large issue, and I think that is exactly it. That whole pressure to be perfect and the whole pressure to I need to have this high GPA so I can keep my scholarship or get a scholarship, so I might make some choices, cut some corners in order to get the results that I want. It's very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, Megan, thank you so much for the call.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Maria.
Thanks, Megan.
You're welcome. So, by the way, there was another caller who dropped a few moments ago. So if you would like to call back, it was from a 716 area code. So if you were waiting and you were on hold and you hung up, please feel free to call back, and we'd be happy to pick up your call. So, Maria, as we think about what parents and teachers and the role that they play in perpetuating this, what would you suggest that they do differently?
Well, I think one thing for parents is that this could be such a great opportunity to be able to let down the guard that you don't have to be perfect as a parent either. So for example, a lot of parents struggle with the pressure to be perfect too. I know perfectionism in motherhood is a huge issue. There's so many books written on the topic. But for instance, I spoke at the National Conference for College Women Student Leaders in 2012, and I had a mother write me, and she just said that her own perfectionism is totally self-imposed, and she says she has four daughters, and she told them all that grades don't matter. You learn just as much not getting the A if you understand what you did wrong and you learn from it. But she said that she can't hear that message for herself. So unfortunately, even though she's saying to her daughters, you don't have to be perfect, she's not role modeling that because she's struggling with these issues herself. So it could be such a great opportunity to, you know, mothers and daughters or you know, fathers, sons, whatever it is, to be able to have these conversations together and say, you know, we both struggle with the pressure to be perfect, and let's talk about that. And, you know, let's learn together. I think that's a really empowering message, and probably really freeing for a lot of parents too, who kind of are afraid to let their kids see them be vulnerable and see that they're not perfect and that they make mistakes.
Yeah, it's interesting. And those are the kinds of messages that I grew up with. I mean, I remember my parents always saying, you know, as long as you've tried your best, that's great. You know, it doesn't have to be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you've given it your best and tried your best. I think that's a really important message. I mean, it doesn't mean that we can't strive or that we shouldn't be rewarded for striving to always improve and do better, but that's very different than having to get that perfect A and that perfect 100 and that perfect blemishless face and, you know, and everything else that that ends up killing us in the end. So that's great. We have another caller, actually. Looks like from Long Island, from a 516 number. So you are on the air. Thanks for calling Mark My Words.
Hi, this is Alex. Hi, Maria.
Hi, Alex.
How are you? I was actually calling to ask a question. I was curious, I definitely respect, the idea of, what professionalism definitely affecting women, but I was, just curious, what the male perspective, how that really affects men, too. Because I've definitely seen over the course of my, undergraduate and high school career that I think it's manifests itself in different ways, but I think men definitely go through a lot of stress just as well, but just kind of, hide it or maybe talk about it in different terms. But I feel like any advice for the guys.
Excellent question.
Yeah. Well. First of all, Alex, do you want to tell the listeners how we know each other?
Oh, sure. Yeah, Maria and I know each other since I was in freshman year of high school when I was super stressed out and at the peak of perfectionism. And I emailed her. I found her website online on a whim and just decided to email her immediately. And we've been basically at that point we just started talking and it was from then on, we've been she's been my mentor. It's been great. really helped me get through a lot. And we've, really been, fortunate to stay in touch even until now. So over, I guess we've been, 6 years? 7 years? Crazy.
Yeah. I think it's been about
Are you the young man that had a video on Maria's website?
I might have been one of them, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that was me.
Very good. I've seen your video, and I was very, very touched by your story.
Yeah,
so nice job.
It really, really, truly helped me in many ways.
Yeah, Alex did a video for me when I spoke at a high school in California, and he talked about his experiences with perfectionism and what he learned from it. And, now he's in college, and I'm sure like all of us, it's not like you snap your fingers and perfectionism is gone,
mm-hmm.
but you learn how to keep perspective, and not let it take over your whole life. So that's
yeah,
wonderful.
Exactly.
And yeah, I mean, how I see it affecting men, basically what I see is that it affects men and women. So when my TED Talk came out, it was a TEDx Buffalo women event, so the talk was geared toward women. But then I had private messages on Facebook, more than I can count, from men telling me how that talk helped them, and they have their inner critic, and they face the same issues that women do. So I think that a lot of young men, and I think that maybe you can talk about that, Alex, too, what you see on college campuses, but I think a lot of young men will kind of bottle it up and internalize it more than women. So they're not going to go to their campus counseling center, walk through the counseling center doors and talk about it and maybe get the help that they need. Instead, they might not talk about it, or they might search on the internet and then, the anonymity that the internet affords, maybe try to seek help that way.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely feel like it definitely does manifest itself in college for men, too, just in different ways. I feel like in general, culturally, it's not as acceptable for men to talk about their feelings, and I feel like that's what you kind of have to do to get through, really hard days of perfectionism is talking about it, either at a counseling center or with another friend. So I feel like that's kind of, the bigger damage, is, the silence is probably, more harmful in the long run. Especially, being in college and being someone that's on a pre-med track, you definitely feel a lot of stress every day. So I feel talking it through is definitely an important step for men to take, and whether through a counselor or through some sort of online help, I feel like that's probably the bigger block that men face with it.
And with men holding in their feelings more than traditionally so than women, I think Woody Allen had a line in, I believe it was Annie Hall. He was asked about getting angry and how he handles his anger, and he says, "Oh, I don't get angry. I just grow tumors." And there's a lot of truth to that. And I believe, it's still today men die from stress-related illnesses more frequently than women do. I know that used to be the case. I'm sure it still is, although it's changing. You know, as women enter the workforce and have more pressures that they didn't have 50 years ago, you know, there might be more of that going on. And, you know, men and women, we're wired differently. So we manage our stress differently. We communicate our feelings differently. And, you know, so we can certainly see the effects of that.
Definitely.
Well, Alex, thanks for the call, and it's great to know
that
you're doing well.
Yes,
you're welcome.
Really a huge journey. Thank you, yeah. See you, Maria.
Thank you, Alex.
Bye, guys.
You're welcome, Alex. Take care. So, yeah, you know, I'm glad to hear that you got a lot of private messages from men as well, and that men are actually reaching out to express that and to ask for help. Because I think, you know, men are also under some pressures that they weren't under years ago as well in terms of, you know, having to look good. You know, men started becoming sex symbols. That was something that wasn't marketed to us. It was an untapped market. And for so many years, women were sex symbols. Men didn't have to be. And, you know, somebody got the bright idea that, hey, we can make money by making men feel just as inadequate as women for not having a perfect body. You know, and now we have eating disorders among men that are increasing. And I know certainly in the world of gay men, there's even more of that pressure to have just the right body and the right muscle to body fat ratio. And, you know, and it's just an enormous pressure. I mean, you could see the effects of there as well.
Yeah, I wrote an article before for CampusCom right actually in March, and I called it March Madness, which, you know, obviously is a little playoff basketball, but it's this whole, we're going on spring break, so now it's this whole pressure, we have to look perfect. And I interviewed men and women in really vulnerable, honest interviews from young men talking about the pressure to look perfect. And I think one young man said something like, we eat the cheeseburger, we worry if it's going to, you know, how it's going to affect our thighs, but we would rather die than tell you that and admit it. So instead we bottle it up and internalize it.
Wow, yeah. Very true. Very true. So, you know, if you could, I love the story you tell this in your TED Talk about where you got the title for your TED Talk, which of course is Recovering Perfectionist My Ass. I think it's such a brilliant story. So for those listeners who have either not had the wonderful opportunity to hear it yet or would love to hear it again live from the horse's mouth, tell us how you came up with that title.
Yeah, so I started CampusCom and from just really great opportunities, I started getting speaking invitations on college campuses. And I did not have a public speaking background, never took a public speaking class in my life. I was a great writer, so I could write a great speech, but I didn't know how to deliver one. So when that happened, I started asking everybody for advice, and people were just telling me, be yourself, you're likable. And I'm like, you know, be yourself. I'm like, I need tutorials. So I started looking online and signing up for webinars and teleseminars on, you know, public speaking and all the tips and tricks. And I just remember sitting on one webinar and the trainer said something like, you know, public speakers, you have just a split second to make a first impression with an audience. And if you use filler copy, like, you know, yeah, you know, if you just use that one time, that studies show that you're going to lose credibility with an audience. So, I joke in my TED Talk that my inner perfectionist, who I call Perfectoria, that Perfectoria and me just absolutely love that webinar. So I started scripting all my speeches and memorizing them word for word. And I have a gift where I can memorize pretty quickly, which is great, but it also disturbs me because when I memorize every single word, I can, you know, lose a connection with an audience and come across as a little too perfect. So what was happening was I was speaking at leadership conferences and speaking at, on college campuses, and I would get anonymous feedback forms. And I was getting some emails that were saying, oh, my God, you were the best speaker I've ever heard, and that was fantastic. And that was great, I mean, for my ego. But was I really connecting mm-hmm. with those students and showing them that they don't have to be perfect and they can give their dreams a try? Or was I showing them that you have to be perfect to be successful? So, and then other students were emailing me messages like, you know, too perfect and show off. And then one audience member wrote a comment that said, not one like, yeah, or you know, in a whole 60-minute speech, recovering perfectionist, my ass.
Love that.
Which I will fully admit that I buried my head in the sand and probably cried for 2 days. But afterwards, I needed to hear those messages. They freed me to stop being so perfect and pompous, because people don't like you as much when you're trying to be perfect.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, it's negative feedback is such a gift, right? It's really it's what helps us to improve our game and be our best. And so what a gift that is. And I think that's also an important message for somebody recovering from perfectionism, is to recognize that, you know, you can't make a mistake, because everything you do is a choice that you make in the moment. It's what you thought was best, or you would have made a different choice. And there was something to learn from it. You know, there's all these different mm-hmm. ways that we can experience life, and every choice we make leads us to a way to experience life. Sometimes we experience mm-hmm. life in the form of negative feedback that can be given very gently and very lovingly, or negative feedback that can be given pretty harshly. And in any event, you know, it's a gift. It's a gift, and you know, it's about looking at what is there that I can learn from this, instead of, oh my God, why did this happen, and what am I supposed to do about it? You know, what did I learn? What did I learn about what I value? And I think those are some important lessons for recovering perfectionists out there.
Yeah. And you know what's so interesting? You know how when you start typing a search term into Google, and sometimes, like, you start typing a word or two and then phrases automatically pop up, and that's search terms that are
yep.
that have been searched a lot by people? So if you
mm-hmm.
Google mistake make, what comes right up is mistakes make you who you are, mistakes make you stronger. And then if you type in perfect is, it'll say perfect is the enemy of good, perfect isn't easy, and perfect is the enemy of done. So I just thought that was really fascinating.
Wow, that is great. And I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear it's not the other way around. You know,
right?
Because that's all reflective of what people are searching for. So
mm-hmm.
that's good to hear that there's some consciousness around this out there. Interesting. And you know, the other thing too, as you talk about Google, one of the things that one of my co-trainers at IPEC, Cheryl, always had said about, you know, our tendency sometimes to want to say, oh, I hope this doesn't happen. You know, this has to be perfect. I hope this thing doesn't happen, and I don't want this, and I don't want that. And
mm-hmm.
the universe doesn't hear the no's, the don'ts, and the nots. So, you know, everything that you try to avoid is really what ends up coming to you anyway. And she gives the metaphor with Google, and she says, if you type the search term no football into Google, what results do you get? Right?
Football.
You get everything that has to do with football. So Google and search terms, and it's a growing number of metaphors for life in how search terms work, because our lives are a giant search, right? So
yeah.
Very cool. And so, you know, you talk about your inner perfectionist. You talk about Perfectoria in your TED Talk. And there was something related to that I would love for you to tell, which is before we wrap, which is a story of somebody you said who wouldn't post about a job interview she had on Facebook. And it was related to her perfectionism.
Yeah.
I think it's a very powerful story.
one of my clients who I've had the privilege to coach with one on one. She brilliant young woman, and graduated with her master's degree and was starting the whole job process. And she had a job interview, and she was embarrassed and didn't want to post it to Facebook to her friends and family that she had an interview. And when we talked about that, she said that it was because she didn't want to have it be public, because if she didn't get the job, then she would be embarrassed and she would feel ashamed. So, going through different coaching techniques that I learned about through going through the IPAC program that, you and I have both gone through with my client, and we really discovered that at the heart of it, when she was in middle school, she was very intelligent little girl, and they moved her up a grade, and the whole school was talking about it, and oh my God, look how smart she is. And I think as soon as they moved her up in a grade, within a couple of weeks, she was having a lot of trouble adjusting and taking on the new material. So they moved her back down a grade, and the whole school saw it, and she was embarrassed and ashamed. So I think that, her little inner perfectionist was formed as a way to protect her from that embarrassment that she experienced when she was in middle school, which is, it's really powerful. And I think that that's something that's so important that I learned, is that the inner, our perfectionist a lot of times is trying to serve us. Yes, it may be in a misguided way, but it's not about fighting with your inner perfectionist. Like, you see all these things in our culture about, you have to fight with yourself and battle with yourself and beat and win your, I triumph over your inner perfectionist and kick her to the curb. And I see that, and I just think to myself, like, who wins when you're in battle with yourself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nobody.
Right.
So, wow. So Maria, what's as we wrap, let me just ask you, what's the bottom line message that you would like listeners to take away tonight with regard to whether it's their own perfectionism or helping somebody else that they love or care about who seems to be on a path to crashing and burning from pursuing perfectionism?
Yeah, I mean, I think that everybody is going to come on their own journey. Just come to the understanding that perfectionism, it is glorified and it is rewarded, but at what cost? And is the cost too high of a price for you to pay? If it's robbing you of your joy or your happiness or your health, where's the line for you? And I often say this when I speak on college campuses, and this is a universal message for people of all ages, that, you're more than the measure of your GPA or the title on your business card, the size of your jeans, but ultimately you are enough. And if we can say that to ourselves as many times as it takes for us to believe it, just imagine how different our lives could be.
Yeah. As you were saying that, I'm just reminded of the song from, it's time for a Broadway reference. It's a song from Chorus Line where she sings, "Who am I anyway? Am I my resume?" Right? And it's all about, like, who am I? Am I this piece of paper that shows, like, my best foot forward? Is that really who I am? There's got to be more to this. So that's what I'm reminded of as you say that. And I think, too, you touched upon something really important, too, Maria, in what you just said. And that is about, if it robs you of your happiness and joy, it's a problem. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine it's very difficult for some people to make the distinction between
high achieving and struggle for perfectionism. They mm-hmm. probably look like one and the same to people who suffer from perfectionism, right? And I think, you know, just like sometimes we want to look at, you know, what's the difference between a drinking problem and somebody who drinks socially? Well, what impact does the drinking have on your life? And what if you can't drink on a given night that you wanted to? How do you feel, right? So I think with perfectionism, it's the same way. It's, am I addicted to success, or am I striving for a healthy level of success? Well, how does it make you feel when you're not successful at something? You know, and what impact does the strive for success have on your life? And I think that, you know, one of the basic principles upon which I coach, and I know that you do too because it's a principle that we both learned in our coach training together, is the whole concept of do we make fear-based choices or conscious-based choices? Are the choices that we make from a conscious, loving place because it's something that really serves us and gives us joy and happiness, or is it a fear-based choice where it's chosen as a way to avoid the pain of something bad happening? And if we live our lives constantly choosing things that help us to avoid pain at all costs, well, there's the key phrase, at all costs. It's going to cost us a lot. Pain in our lives is sometimes necessary. It's pain is inevitable, right? It's the suffering that's the optional part. So, you know, I think that that certainly bears mentioning. So, Maria, this has been really wonderful, and I'm imagining that there might be a bunch of people out there that might want to connect with you and chat with you. So how can they get in touch with you? And I understand you've got something that you're going to offer our listeners tonight for listening to the show.
Yeah, well, first, I mean, thank you so much for having me on the show today. This has been so fun and freeing for me all at the same time because it felt so good to do an interview that I didn't script. For all the listeners on the call, my business in the college market, helping to shape young leaders and letting go of the pressure to be perfect, is Campus Calm. So that's campus, CALM.com. And then I am really excited to announce and unveil my brand new coaching website that is not perfect, and I'm proud of that because it's a work in progress. And it is www.rewriteperfect.com, and then if you go to /markmywords. And I know that, Mark, you're going to actually post the link on your page so that people can easily click through over to it. But new coaching website is just all about throwing out the conventional definition of perfect, which is flawless without fault, to create your new definition for life. And I have some great starter packages that I'm offering with some really great discounts and promotional packages for your listeners. So I would be so excited and honored to work with any of you.
Great. Well, thank you for that, because my listeners are special people.
As well as
a lot of listeners tonight that are your special people too. So so that's, they're very deserving of that. So thank you for that. We all appreciate that. So great. So Maria, this has really been wonderful. Again, I'm so proud of you and the work that you've done since the time that I met you in class, and you're just doing some awesome stuff. And I really urge anybody out there, if you are dealing with perfectionism yourself, or you know somebody who is, Maria is the woman to call and to talk to. I think you'll be very, very happy that you did. So thank you so much again, Maria, for being with us tonight.
Thank you, Mark, and thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure being your student and learning so much from you going through the IPEC program. It's really helped me to kind of let go of my own inner perfectionist. So it's been a pleasure.
Great. Well, thanks. Thanks for that. Thanks very much for that.
Well, that about wraps it up for tonight, as I invite you to mark your words if you'd like. If you have feedback about the show, just go to markmywordsradio.com and scroll down to the feedback link. If you'd like to follow the Life Coach Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio, just visit us at www.blogtalkradio.com/Life Coach Radio Network and then click on the follow button. Also, visit our website at www.lifecoachradionetworks.com and learn about all of our networks. I hope you enjoyed the past hour and that you found it engaging, enlightening, and stimulating. You can listen to Mark My Words live on the first and third Sundays of every month at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, as well as listen to any previous show from my archives at markmywordsradio.com and on iTunes by searching Mark My Words. I look forward to speaking with you all again next time. Thank you for listening to Mark My Words. I'm Mark, and those are my words. Good night.
Geico presents sharing versus oversharing. Today, Bridget Griffin shared a video of her daily yoga routine, two self-help articles, and her new blog called Build Your Inner Bridge with Bridge. Girl, your sharing has turned into oversharing. No worries, Bridge. Geico has some info worth sharing with your 7 blog followers, like how you could save money on your car insurance, update your policy, and report a claim just by visiting geico.com. How's that for building your inner bridge? Bridge. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.